Today, before I read from this amazing book, I want to take a moment for us to have silence. And I want to have it for two reasons. The first is to be with the souls who passed from the body during the experience that happened in Boston. And the second is for these little seal pups who are coming by the thousands on shore. And they are telling us something very clearly about what's happening in the ocean. And the only way that they can speak is by bringing their presence. And now there are many people who volunteered to take them back into the ocean. And we are in a time of great change, as all of us are aware, I'm sure. And many times the messengers are not the ones that we expect. Some of them cannot speak. They can only show us that change is imminent and it's already in process. And then there are other events which, again, show us, as we were talking about several weeks ago, about beliefs, the strength of belief. The individuals who created the bombs and set the bombs, that all came from belief. And the belief was powerful enough that they acted in action and created whatever they created. And if we look at every war, it's always been about beliefs. It hasn't been about anything but beliefs. And if the beliefs are so powerful that they cause us to move in ways that are less than love, then we can only have compassion for the souls which they are. What they're doing as an ego personality is quite different than who they are as souls. They're souls of the divine, or God. So I would like to bring forward all the souls of these beloved little pups, because they have souls too, and those individuals who passed from the earth plane, for their souls have now dropped that costume, that energy, and they are now in a process of aligning to whatever it is that they will be coming into in the next embodiment. And so it goes. But for us to be able to hold without judgment and to see every soul which is divine, there is no soul which is not divine, and to hold that divine consciousness for just a few moments in quiet. So if we just open our hearts and allow that to happen. Thank you. I do acknowledge and give thanks for the energy within our hearts of pure love, which enfolds all souls, regardless of the exterior form, realizing that all is divine, and there is nothing which is not divine within every soul upon the earth plane. And for all of this, I do give unceasing thanks. Thank you. And I call now for the divine which we are to gently open our eyes. Thank you. Today I'm going to talk about one of my most favorite things in the whole wide world. And there are a lot of them. Have you noticed? But I'm going to read first. But you might get a sense of the direction that we'll be going in this evening. Some of these you've heard before, but they'll be 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. All these miracles are about to drive me crazy. My elbows, my ears, my nose, my wife or husband's nagging, the sweet darkness of the night, and that blanket of existence around my soul, and my heart connected to the pulse of every creature. I'm afraid of the daylight. Yesterday, God was everywhere throwing bliss, balls, planets, and their kin. Oh, I love to see that. Everything I see, hear, touch, feel, taste, speak, think, imagine is completing a perfect circle God has drawn. Let me repeat that. Everything I see, hear, touch, feel, taste, speak, think, imagine is completing a perfect circle God has drawn. Sing my tongue, sing my hand, sing my feet, my knee, my loins, my whole body. Indeed, I am God's choir. I will repeat that. Sing my tongue, sing my hand, sing my feet, my knee, my loins, my whole body. Indeed, I am God's choir. There are so many positions of love, each curve on a branch, the thousand ways your eyes can hold us, the infinite shapes each mind can draw. The spring orchestra of scents and sounds wafting through the air, the currents of light combusting like passionate lips, the revolution of the universe's skirt whose folds contain other worlds. Our very sigh has fallen against God's inconceivably close, omnipresent, divine body. Know the true nature of your beloved. In God's loving eyes, your every thought, word and movement is always, always beautiful. Tonight, I want to talk about the B-O-D-Y. The B-O-D-Y. I love this body. Now, let's look at our soul agreements. The body you have right now, before you came into the body, you said, I want a body that will allow me to learn lessons that perhaps I have not yet fully realized. Because often we will have realizations, but we don't bring them all the way down into the earth plane, into this reality. They stay up here in different realms of consciousness, but they're not actually anchored here into the physical. And one of the reasons that we're in physical body, I mean, the question is, why do we have physical bodies? Why can't we just kind of float around, you know, and have a really good time? Because this body takes attention, does it not? And one of the reasons that we do is so that we can anchor fully all those energies of transformation that we undergo. And one of them, let us say, is our capacity to be in our body, and as we were just a few moments ago, and simultaneously opening our heart and allowing the soul energy to flow through us. How magnificent is that? That we could allow the formless to be felt and realized in our form. Now, this is quite incredible. And when you look at the vibration of soul, which is very, very rapid, all right, and it indwells in every single cell in our body. So how does it go from this into this? Okay, that's absolutely fantastic to me. That something so refined, which is the vibration of God, because that's our soul, that vibration is then stepped down so that we can experience it right here in what considers to be very solid. I mean, this is really quite solid, isn't it? Now, this is, for me, miraculous. And one of the reasons we re-embody and that we design the bodies that we're going to have is so that whatever the teachings are that this body is going to give us, we hopefully will be open to those teachings. Now, you don't have to be open to those teachings. You can say, oh man, I don't think I really like it this time. I think I'm just going to kind of be here. But next time, maybe I'll choose something else. This time, because I know I've had a lot of embodiments where I was just kind of pretty much floating up there, doing a lot of work in the divine consciousness, but not necessarily being in my body, which meant that I could allow myself to embody just what I wanted to embody, not the whole kit and caboodle. This time I said, the whole kit and caboodle, thank you. I'm going to do all of it. I'm going to embody all of it. And I want to be in relationship. And I want to see what that is. And I want to be in the life fully, fully. I'm not going to have kids, because that's a little bit too much. Sorry, I can't go down that road. But I'm going to have a lot of children in my extended families, okay? So I'm going to have a lot of kids that just won't come out of my body. So I said, okay, that'll work for me. Now, these are all my soul agreements that I'm talking about. So you can look at your own lives and say, gee, look at the interesting things that I've chosen. You chose all of them. There are no accidents about who we are and how we are and the things we experience. Some of you in this group have magnificent voices. Magnificent. I've heard you sing. And I go, oh, no, I don't think so. That's not my gift this time. But the physical body has been my gift this time. I said, I want to be able to have my physical body express the consciousness that I wish to embody this time. And I'd like the physical body to be part of that extension, that reality in this world. And so, how did I decide I would do that? First, I would wake up early, which I did. Secondly, that I would be allowed in my family, because I chose this family, you know how we do. We all take different energies from the family, and we all have different positions each time we re-embody. So this time, two of them said, I'll be mom, I'll be dad. And said, oh, cool, all right. And then this will be sister and brother and so on. And I said, I want to have a mother and father that will allow the development of my physical so that I can bring the energy of the divine into my physical body and have it be easy, not hard, but very easy. So my mom and dad had both come in being very physically active. So they were already, quote unquote, in their bodies. So when I wanted to be in my body, they got it right away. And my mother sent me to tap dancing class. Oh, shuffleball change with those heavy little clodhoppers on my feet. I came back from my first little tap dancing class and I said, I will never go back to that class. And I'm like 7 or 8 years old. And my mom said, well, what'd you learn? I said, shuffleball change. I said, ixnay, no way, sorry. So time passed, and eventually they got me into ballet. And that was fine because it was full of discipline and full of beauty. And I needed the beauty because our souls adore color. They adore beauty and sound and light and music. I mean, you know, our souls just thrive on those things. So that was a great choice. Time passes. And as I was receiving more and more of the energy from the divine, I needed my body to be stronger and stronger because this is big energy. And I said, I have a small body, but I said, I want to be very strong in my body so that as this energy is coming through, I will be able to hold it. So I built my body over time and continue every day doing what I need to do so that the alignment of this divine energy moving through me is aligned with how I am in my body. And I don't go away to do the work. Do you understand what I'm saying when I say go away? Many people who do this work, they go away and then they come back and then they do whatever they do. I said, I don't want to do that. I want to stay here every second, even when I'm sleeping. I want to be able to dream consciously. I want to be able to remember what I dream. I want to know the significance of what that dream is. And when I awaken, I want to awaken and be fully present the moment my eyes are open. I don't want to have this time of, you know, when you wake up and go, oh. Michelle says, I'm Jack in the Box. I mean, the alarm goes off. Hello. Okay, I asked for this. I asked to be fully awake when my eyes are open and to be as awake as possible even when my eyes are closed. Now, each of you has a whole different series of soul agreements, physically, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually, that you will either anchor through the physical or you will not. Many people, if the trauma of the childhood was very great, emotionally, they have split off. And then they will do the work that they need to do, hopefully, to come back in and to be able to really be with what that is. You can have many levels of, and I won't use this word because it is the word in the vernacular that you'll understand. They can have spiritual abuse, they can have mental abuse, they can have verbal abuse, they can have emotional abuse, they can have physical abuse, they can have sexual abuse. There are lots of levels of abuse. Now, when this occurs in the childhood, when you grow in consciousness sufficiently, and if you do the work in clearing what any of those patterns might be that you were imprinted with, you have come to a very significant place within this embodiment. Because now, my prayer is that the compassion that you have for self has grown tremendously as a result of the work that you have done. Now, why would we need those kinds of experiences? Why? Why did we choose them? Was it not so that we could have self-love, compassion, self-realization? I'm talking about self, the self, all that we are, aligning to every experience we've ever had, and to hold it with such compassion, such love and forgiveness, that we no longer have to say, I am outside of myself here. I am inside myself here. Now, this is huge. If all of us went around and told our stories, we'd all say, wow, these stories are so powerful. And the more powerful the story is, the stronger the imprinting, but also the greater the divine consciousness will be when the healing and the clearing has occurred. And that's how it works. So when the energies from my childhood, which were very powerful, and I had two very powerful parents, when that energy, I came to do my work with it, what I found was that as I released it, the energy of the divine, which had not been available to me, began to pour through me, literally, just pour through me. So I honor that if we're talking about our physical bodies, we're really talking about not only the formless of how we decided what this form would be like, how the family entity was going to form itself and how we were going to be present in that, then how we were going to move away from that family entity to become who we really are. And all during that time, our soul is quietly speaking to us, even if we do not yet have the ears to hear it. And it's not necessarily this ear of which I am speaking. This ear is always open. It's always listening. It always knows what's going on. Your heart is always, always the center of that consciousness that is saying, here's another change. Now, I had to fall in love with change. Change is an aspect of love, going from the present vibration to a higher vibration in an upward spiraling pattern. Now, you might say, why can't I just go in a straight line? Let's get done with this change. Let's go. The reason being that the ego needs all the time of the spiral to be able to get what the change is. And often we may have to do the spiral several times. If it's something that the ego really says, you know what, I don't think I really like this change very much. Well, if that's the one you're working on, then you will work it. And then eventually, you'll look at yourself and you'll say, I'm not who I used to be. I mean, things that made me just, you know, made my skin crawl, want to grit my teeth, made me want to shout out loud. Anybody know any of those feelings? Hallelujah! Thank you, God. All right. All of us have feelings something like that. Well, now, because of the work, it just flows. It just moves off. A friend of mine said, and this was about 10 years ago, it was such a great teaching. Everyone's my teacher, and this was her teaching. She said, I have decided that I'm just Swiss cheese. I just have a lot of big holes. So whenever something comes at me that I don't think I really can handle, it just goes whoosh, through one of my holes. And I said, I want to be Swiss cheese. I felt like I was a dartboard. You know what I mean? How long? Okay? I said, I don't want to be a dartboard anymore. Thank you very much. I just want to be Swiss cheese. I want to have nice big holes. I want them all over. Each one of my bodies, physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual. Because I want the flow of the consciousness to be unimpeded in every direction. I do not want to say, you know, if you just rephrase that, I could hear it. Or, I really didn't like the tone of your voice when you said that. Or, you know, your body language just kind of irritated me, you know. I mean, I used to be like that. Why not? I grew up in a family that was hypercritical. Anybody else grew up in a family that was hypercritical? Okay, yeah, thank you. And so I had to put on armor because here it would come. And, you know, I was young and foolish. Didn't have a clue as to what was going on. But I would go, why do I feel like I'm a punching bag in this family? You know? I said, I don't think that's a good idea. So I had to learn how to receive without taking it personally. This was huge for me. Huge. And then when I began to study and read about spiritual consciousness, they would talk about the impersonal life. And I would go, oh, I wonder what that's all about. The impersonal life. You know, does that mean I have to lose who I am? I don't want to lose who I am. I came into the body to be who I am. And I had to realize that the impersonal life was the life that allowed all things to be. That I no longer had to take it personally. I could take it as it came. And the impersonal life allowed me then to receive even more of the divine consciousness, because divine consciousness is absolutely impersonal. Let me repeat that. Divine consciousness is absolutely impersonal. So if you're taking something personally and you think it has to do with God, it is your ego, darlings. It has nothing to do with God. Now, there are a lot of religions and beliefs that God can be personified. And there, I have to thank Michelangelo for that. He's one of the great painters, as you know. And on the Sistine Chapel, he has the picture of God with the white hair and the beard. And he's reaching his hand out. And there's, you know, human man almost touching. And so when I have asked people, please describe God, they'll say, you know, he's that old man. He sits on a cloud and he has that white beard and that white hair. And that's true for them. And that's fine that that is true for them, because they need that picture. That picture is really important, else they wouldn't have it. For me, when someone says, well, describe God to me, and I'd have to say, it's not describable. My experience of God is something that is indescribable, but when I am not in the presence of God, I'm very clear. And when I'm in the presence of God, I'm very clear. And I know the difference between the two. Now, when I am in the impersonal, I experience God in a very extraordinarily expanded way, because then I am expanded, because I have left the personal and gone into the impersonal. Now, when I am being very personal, God will meet that personal part of me as well. Do you understand? The personal will meet the personal. The impersonal will meet the impersonal. And I do not require that God be anything other than whatever God is in that moment. And I find that God is varying constantly. You look at the universe and everything that's going on in the universe, and if you'll recall, I've said that everything that exists is a thought within the mind of God. So all of us, we are a thought being held within the mind of God. Every planet, every universe, every everything, every sun, every moon, every star. There is nothing which is not a thought held within the mind of God. Now, think back to a thought that you had yesterday. Lord Almighty, did I have a thought yesterday? Yes, I believe I did. Let's say you had the thought, I'm hungry. I mean something very simple. Okay. Now, you can even, I can, particularly when I'm with my siblings, and we'll talk about an event, it's as clear as a bell. Those events and those thoughts at that moment have not left my mind. They're there. Now, they're not up front. they're not the ones I think every day, but they're still there. Absolutely. There's no thought that I have thought, nor any event that has occurred in my life that is not still within my mind. Mm-hmm. My mind, not my brain, my mind. Okay? It's in my consciousness. It's still there. And a trigger, some little thing can happen. Happened the other day. A little trigger happened. I thought, I haven't thought about that in years. How many of you have had that experience where something will trigger it and you'll go, I haven't thought about that in years. And then suddenly it's like a movie starts running that shows you the whole, you know, you had the little trailer and then suddenly it's the whole movie that you're watching what the event was. Yes. So do you think that the mind of God could not hold everything for the eternity that is? Well, of course. Now, what we're doing is through our allowing that divine consciousness to come through us, we are creating, as we choose, every moment, what our thoughts will be. What our thoughts will be. Not only are we creating them, but we're also maintaining the thoughts that really have meaning for us. Always. I can think back to expressions, and I kind of tease Michelle about it. We call it Southern, speaking Southern. And he'll write them down because some of them are so outrageously weird. He'll say, how do you spell that? I said, you got to be kidding me. How do you spell it? I don't even know if it has a spelling. But they're words that suddenly will come up in my vocabulary that I haven't spoken. I'm 70 years old. That I haven't spoken in 70 years. And there it is on the tip of my tongue. I go, holy moly. All right. So, if I'm holding thoughts for 70 years, then the divine is holding it for 70 millennium, 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 millennium. I say that we arose from the primordial ooze. And in that primordial ooze, there was perhaps just a storm and rain, and there was electricity, there was a flash of lightning. And that flash of lightning went into that primordial ooze, which may have been all over the planet, who knows. And with that impulse of energy, then there was not only the cells that were there, but some level of cell division, who knows. And out of that primordial ooze has come all creation. Repeating, releasing, repeating, releasing, changing, releasing, releasing meaning death, releasing, gaining momentum, experiencing, the divine experiencing itself, and then saying, this doesn't actually work. It releases. Then the next, and the next, and the next, and onward it goes, onward it goes. And then suddenly, here we are sitting in this room. Now, if we look upon each other just for a moment and we see the myriad choices that each one of us have made completely, amazingly, and this isn't the first go-round, you know? This is, I don't know, how many go-rounds have we had? Mm-hmm. And there are people who say, well, I just want to get off the wheel. And then when I ask people, I say, do you want to come back again? It's 50-50. 50 of them say, yeah, I want to come back. And the others say, I don't think so. Now, I do not know which is going to embody again and which isn't and how it will look. I do know that if we're sitting in this room, there is something within us that knows the truth of our being so clearly, so specifically about who we are that whatever happens in the exterior world, it does not make us fall away from the truth of our being. If anything, it makes us stand more clearly in the truth of our being. Do you understand what I'm saying? The exterior events, when you have not done any inner work and you do not realize the truth of who you are, any exterior event will throw you off. And it will create whatever it creates in your world. If the exterior event occurs and you are in alignment with the truth of your being, nothing can move you. Nothing can move you. You will stand in that truth regardless of anything that occurs. Now, I was given a vision of a great pillar, and it was standing in the desert. And the winds came, and the winds blew the sand, because it was sand, and it began to whirl around this pillar. And as it did, you could see that the power of the sand was, you know, creating little dents and imperfections and roughness until the pillar itself was almost completely roughed around. And as I'm watching this, the voice of the divine said to me, you see, when you're in embodiment, it may feel like this, that the winds of change and the winds of turmoil and the winds of whatever come into your life, they will whip around you, but you will not be moved. What happens in the exterior is not what is important. That will happen because that will happen. But what is important is how you hold who you are, regardless of what the exterior events happen to be. And it can also happen with interior events within you as well. So we have the ability, if we choose, to each day renew who we are in this divine consciousness. And that renewal is very important because we don't know what the day will bring. So what is renewal? For some people, it is music. For some people, it is water. For some people, it is prayer. For some people, it's meditation. For some people, it is being in quiet solitude and in nature. For other people, it's being in creative process. Creating. It doesn't make any difference what it is. But each of us needs what that is to hold this, because we're the ones who can hold the energy regardless of what it looks like out there. That's our job, every one of us in this room, if we choose to take it on. We will hold compassion. We will hold love. If you ask, when something like Boston happened, if you say, why, what, when, where, how, who? That's all the ego. Those are not the questions to be asked. There is no question to be asked. If we're truly doing our work, we will simply open our hearts and we will bring our love and compassion to whatever it is. It is not our job to judge it. It is not our job to say whatever would be less than love. That job is being taken care of quite magnificently by a whole bunch of people. They're all doing that part. That's their part. They said, we'll do it on the news, do it on the radio, do it on the satellite, do it on every single laptop. That's what we do. We answer those questions. Who, what, when, where, how, when, who, all that stuff. That's what we're doing. That's not our job. Now, if you want that job, then do it well. If you want those questions to be what you occupy yourself with, because there will be more incidences, darlings, not less. That's the deal, okay? That's the earth plane. And if you need to ask those questions, then do it well. I don't ask those questions anymore. Someone is doing a magnificent job at that, and I don't have to do that. Because I don't know a whole bunch of folks who are doing the other. I hope all of you may choose to do that, to really hold in love and compassion everything that unfolds. Now, if you have a belief, and again, these are beliefs, about good, bad, right, wrong, strong beliefs about good, bad, right, wrong, then that's your path. And I used to, because I came from a family that said, this is good, this is bad, this is right, this is wrong. Now, when I looked upon that as I grew, I realized that I had to let that go, because that was too narrow. My life was going to have too many more things going on, and I had to honor that I had to go beyond good, bad, right, wrong. So where am I going to go? Anybody, where am I going to go? Thank you. I'm going to go to L-O-V-E, right? I'm going to go into my heart. I'm going to go into compassion, because I have tremendous empathy for people who have been given such powerful beliefs that their actions are going to create havoc on the earth plane. I have great compassion for them, because it began when they were very small. When we're young, we're like clay, malleable. And then what happens? The imprints occur. And we have no say upon what is imprinted upon us. We have no say at all. because we're just children. But as we grow, then we come to a period of time, particularly when we're teenagers, where we say, you know, this isn't working for me. And then there may be rebellion, blah, blah, blah. You know the story. But those beliefs have not been removed, folks. They're still there. That imprinting is still there. And if it is powerful enough, and we meet people with the same imprinting, or an imprinting that will overlay on the imprinting that we have received, then it will actually empower that individual to perhaps do something that is absolutely loving, or something which is the polar opposite. Do you understand? Often we are drawn to the people who have had an imprinting similar to ours, because we want to have a connection. That's one thing we long for as human beings, is to have connection. And we do not necessarily say, this connection could lead down a path of great destruction. We don't even think about that. We think about, what's the connection here? What's the connection? I have a friend who's been wandering a bit in her life. And I was talking to her, and I said, I was so blessed to find the people that I knew I was supposed to be with. I needed to be with artists. That's what I needed. And I didn't care what the art form was, but I had to be with people who were creative. And she turned to me, and her eyes got big, and she said, oh, I found my people. And I said, who are they? And she said, yoga, these are my people. She said, when I go into that studio, I am in alignment, I am full, I am alive. These are my people. And I went, I got goosebumps. I went, yes. Now, it doesn't mean the way you find your people, it's going to be a high. You can also find your people, and they can take you down a different path. And you may not even know what the path is when you begin upon it. So our compassion has to be great for all, because we do not know what their imprinting was, and we do not know where the path led them, and who that connection, what the connection was that drew them into whatever their experience was that we finally saw the outpicturing of. Do you see what I'm saying? So when there is war, I do not say, these are the bad guys and these are the good guys. I say, this is what? Beliefs. Powerful, powerful beliefs. So many of the people who fight in the armed services in the United States and speak about it, they usually come from a family that has a military history, a military background. And there is that unspoken word, you'll join the military too. You'll go and fight for America. That was the early imprinting. It took them on a path, and that was what it unfolded. And in other families, it was the man, the young man, wanting to find himself. And that's where he went to find himself. In my family, my beloved brother, he was kind of just playing around. Brilliant man, brilliant guy. And the old way, in the 50s, we sent them into the military. And my brother was a very good sailor. So they said, let's send him to the Coast Guard. That'll do it. Well, it did. He got all lined up doing that energy that was around water, and he was in boats and doing his thing, but it was structure and it was the hierarchy, and he got it. And when he came back, we couldn't believe it. And my older sister and I said, who is this guy? Is this the guy that we used to know? Can't be the same guy. Okay. But it was. And I honor that he was imprinted in a way through that experience that allowed him to grow and become a man of extraordinary energy. And the things that he's done in this world have been quite amazing. So I honor that everything serves when we are ready for that which is being served. Okay? Everything serves. Everything. There's nothing which does not serve if we are ready to acknowledge what is being served and how it is serving us. And many times, particularly in my career, I would say, can this possibly be serving me? You know, I'm working so hard. And the voice of the divine would say, yes, dear, carry on. And I would just carry on. And then I would see. The door would open, you know, the bigger picture would be shown to me, and I'd go, of course, I see. But had I stopped here, I would not have seen that picture. If I had stopped there, I would not have seen that unfoldment. Do you understand? The path that we're on, if it is our true path, we will only feel every moment that we're awakening more and more fully to the truth of our being every day. And it doesn't have to be a huge, gigantic leap. It can be that little inchworm that I've talked about. All right? And often, we are the ones who create the next step. We become very good at creating what is the next step for us in our unfoldment. And we honor what that is. And we give ourselves to it. Because we know that it, too, is in service. And some of them, I mean, they, When I was an affiliate artist with the National Endowment of Performing Arts, and they said, you know, we want you to go into as many places as possible and dance. And I said, well, just, what do you mean, you know, theaters? And they said, no, just everywhere. Because this was part of the program, that all we artists, you know, we had a three-year contract, we made more money in those 3 years than we made in our entire life. So we said, of course, we'll go anywhere you want us to go. And they had singers and musicians and dancers and, oh, it was just a fabulous program. And so I said, okay, sure, I'll do that. And I ended up dancing in prisons and juvenile delinquent homes and down in the ghettos. Dance in some really gnarly places. And then I got to dance in theaters, gymnasiums, you name it, I've danced there. And when this unfolded, I went, you know? And I thought that I was going to, you know, be able to talk about the art of dance and, you know, what it takes and blah, blah, blah. And they weren't interested in any of that, forget it, you know? And the Beatles were big at the time, so I choreographed practically every dance I ever did to the Beatles. And that got them. Even if they didn't like what I was dancing, they loved the music. So you learn, I learned to be very flexible, to be, you know, whatever it was, that would happen. And sometimes I'd go into these gymnasiums, and they would have 400 students, literally, sitting in the bleachers. And here's little Mary. Here's Craig in the gymnasium. The first time it happened, I thought, okay, honey, you can do this. So I called on all the spheres to help me. I said, okay, show me how to do this. And the first thing I was told, you have to get them involved. I said, I can do that. I had those guys, women, men, and children, boys, girls, ladies, up and down on those rafters. And I would say, all right, on the count of three, we're going to do blah. And we'd do blah. And then I'd say, okay, now on the count of three, again, you're going to do blah, and then blah, blah. And then they go, da-da, blah, blah. And I said, all right, on the count of four, you're going, da-da-da. Dee-da-ba-ba, da-da-da. Okay, so there was that. And, you know, we were laughing and jumping up and down. And, you know, it was fabulous. And they had a wonderful time, and I had a wonderful time. And they learned something about movement. They just learned that they could just move. And it was a wonderful, wonderful experience. One of the most difficult experiences I had, and I share it with you because this is about you never know what it's going to look like. I had an integrated dance company, and I was dancing in the South. This was the first integrated dance company that had ever been in the South. And we were invited to go to a major black university and dance. And I said, oh, this is going to be such a great thing. And we had gone and had our dress rehearsal, and everything was fine. And the morning of the performance, the principal of the school, or the head of the school, called me of this university and said, one of the students shot another student and killed him yesterday, and you can't come. And I said, I beg your pardon. I said, this is the very reason that we should come. I said, we need to show up on that stage, and we need to do what we do, because we are an integrated dance company, and it doesn't make any difference what happened, what we're bringing them, is a point of view that they will never see again if we don't go and do this. And she said, well, I don't know if it'd be safe. I said, I will tell my dancers, and we will be safe. So I got my dancers all together early in the morning, and we always had a warm-up class before we danced. I said, now we're going to go. This is what's happened. The student has killed another student with a gun, and we're going to go on that stage, and we're going to dance. And they all were afraid. And I said, do not be afraid. I said, I know that we will be fine, and we will change forever. The students are in that auditorium. So are you ready to do this? And they said, yes, we'll go do it. So we went, you know, and the curtain was closed. And I said, all right. The first dance was called Mask Dance. And we had these masks that one of our beautiful women who are in our dance company made for us. And we were completely covered with cloth. And the cloth, you couldn't see who we were, not male or female. And the dance was an extraordinary dance. And the music was pretty avant-garde. So it was, you know, on a whole other plane. It wasn't bebop or rock and roll. They came later in the program. So when the curtain opens, we are in a tableau, and all you see are these heads, and they were white, completely white. You could see our eyes so we could see each other. No mouth and just eyes. And we all had our heads in different positions, and all of our arms were in different positions, so you couldn't tell what was whose arm and whose leg and whose whatever. And everybody had been chit-chatting because of what had happened the day before. And as soon as the curtain opened, and here we were, it was like you could hear a pin drop. Everyone just went like that. We danced that dance. We did all the dances. And at the end of it, of course, the kids didn't know what to do. They had just never ever seen anything like that. And the adults stood up and started clapping. And then everybody else said, oh, maybe that's what we're supposed to do here, okay? And they stood up and they started clapping. And when everybody then rushed up on stage because they wanted to talk, all the black guys wanted to talk to the black dancers, you know? And they wanted to say, you know, how do you leap so high? How do you do those turns? How do you, you know? Because they were all athletes, and these guys had been athletes before they became dancers. The energy that was after the performance was as exquisite, just exquisite. And it was a revelation to, of course, the faculty who were just sitting there just biting their nails, and to see that it had transformed the energy completely. The next day, I got a call from the head of the school, the head of the college there, and she said, I just couldn't believe it. She said, everybody is on a high. Everybody's talking about it. Everybody is renewed. They feel like we can go on from this terrible thing that happened on campus, that we can, you know, have the funeral and we can have the service and we can do everything because you've shown that there's something else going on. And if they hadn't seen it, they would not know. And they would have buried themselves in either the hate or the retribution, or I'm going to get you because you did that, all that kind of just, oh, it's so dangerous. And I honor that you never know, but I have complete faith and trust that when you are doing that which is beauty, that which is love, that which is compassion, whatever it is, that it will be received. Even if they have never seen it before, they will receive it, because we go beyond speaking. We go beyond words. We go beyond any kind of action that was aggressive. There was no aggression in any of these dances. It goes to a place that touches the heart of every human being, where they have never been touched before if they've never seen anything like that before. And it broke open a whole new level of possibility. And after that, they said, you know, we want to have your dancers come again, and we want to have this, and we want to have that, and, you know, it was quite wonderful to see. So that experience came early enough in my career that it changed everything. And I said, wherever I go and whatever I do, I will do it from that place. And even when people say, you just can't happen there, and I'll say, oh, yes, it can happen there. It can happen anywhere. And it is how you come to each situation. Now, often we come to situations which we think might be dangerous and we're very guarded, do we not? We already have our shields up, even if we say, no, no, they're not really there. Well, yeah, probably. And we can transcend that by knowing that we can be lovingly present and allow whatever to unfold, to unfold. When I went in the prisons, I was nervous. I said, how are they going to receive this? I don't know. They were so appreciative. They were so appreciative. Every time I've danced in hospitals, they're so appreciative. I mean, all these places where they've never seen it. And the National Endowment said, we want people who are willing to go to those places and do what they do. We want that. And so all of us, and when we artists would get together and we would all tell our stories, and we were just weeping by the end of it. We said, oh my God, you know? I mean, one guy, he was a saxophonist, and he could play that saxophone. And I never even knew really much about a saxophone, but you know, to hear him play, I mean, it just was drop dead gorgeous. People from all walks of life are touched by beauty. And if we bring our love and compassion to every single situation, what is that? That is beauty. That is beauty. We are holding the beauty of the divine within us. And that beauty is extraordinary. And it will flow through us however the divine wishes us to do so. And it may be simply a touch. Or it may be no touch at all. It may simply be a look or a smile. It may be recognizing that person for the first time who has never, ever had anyone look into their eyes and recognize them for who they really are. Because I do not see individuals as individuals. I see them as the divine. That is my practice. I see them as the divine. And there are days when I think, oh boy, it's going to be a big day. You know, I told her, this is going to be a big day, Mary. Get ready. Because that's what we're here to do. And if you have a practice, I hope everyone has a practice. And if you don't have a practice, it's perfectly all right. If you just get up in the morning and say, thank you, I love you, that's enough. But if you want to say it 6 times, it's even better, right? Repetition is a very good thing. So, go forth from this place and be fully the divine which you are. And don't say, I'll leave it to someone else to do. I'm not divine enough. We're never going to get any better than what we are right this minute, folks. We are who we are in our divinity. And every single thing that we are, even that which our ego says, you know, I just don't like that about you. Mm-hmm. I mean, my ego tells me, why do you do things like that? And I say, oh, just because I like to, you know. It's because that's who I am. And I don't regard myself as saying, I have to look like this or be like that, or it has to have a certain way for it to look like it's love or look like it's joy or look like it's whatever it looks like. I do not concern myself with that. All I know is love. And it will be felt if it is present within you and your heart is open to give it to another. Right? Yeah. Now, if you are saying yes within yourself, the divine will take you places you've never been before. It will invite you to go down different paths than before. It will inquire if you are interested in taking another step in another direction. And you are always free to say no. But you see, there's a part of me that knows that the most powerful word that I can speak is yes. The most powerful word. And I want to continue to say yes until my last breath. And whoever of y'all are around, and Mary's getting ready to pass, and y'all come in and say, okay, what's your last word, Mary? It'll probably be yes, or I'm out of here. I don't know. Yes, I'm out of here. That would work. So, understand, I also feel that if we're not laughing, that we're not doing our work, okay? This is not serious. I was taught that religion was a really serious thing, and I said, well, then I have to find something besides religion. Okay? That was my philosophy. So I just had to wander around until I decided, well, it's not out there. I can't seem to find it. But it was always in here. And it was only when I went inside that I found the truth. And then I said, that's the only place I ever want to go is here. And I don't care what the exterior structure is. I love to go to all churches, all synagogues, all everything. And I've traveled many places in the world and been in many extraordinary places that are sacred. And anybody else would say, this is a mud bath. I'd say, uh-huh. And it's also sacred. So understand that who you are as the divine is always going to be expressing if that is your choice. And if a day comes and you say, you know, I don't think I want to do this anymore. Fine. That's perfectly all right. There is no requirement. No requirement at all. Isn't that fabulous? You don't have a scorecard. You don't get A, B, C, D, E, F, G. You don't get anything except just more love. That's all. And if we allow for that and open to that, then extraordinary things can happen. And I so believe this to be true. So tonight, I would like to do a process that I did many weeks ago, but I'd like to do it again as an affirmation of what I've been speaking about tonight and which you have been receiving. So if everybody could stand, please. And if you would hold your hands out, like this for me, please. Your love is the most powerful thing on the planet. When the divine said that to me last year, I think it was, at first, I felt that I had been given this huge responsibility. And the divine said, no, 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 no. It isn't about obligation or responsibility. That's about the ego energy that says it's got to be a heavy thing. To honor yourself and the love which you are is the most powerful thing that we can do. And our love is the most powerful thing on the planet. There is nothing more powerful than this. And if we live our life from that point of view, then our lives may not appear exteriorly to change, but interiorly they will profoundly change. And you will have miracles in your life, and you will have events that will unfold that will take your breath away. Because your love is the most powerful thing on the planet. So just wait and see what happens. It's going to be a lot of fun, I promise.